Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Rebecca F., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, January 20th, 2014. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Chapter 1, Bill's Story, on page 12. We will revisit the two paragraphs beginning with "My friend suggested," and then move on to where we left off with the fourth paragraph, beginning with "It was only a matter," and focus on that paragraph. Today's readers are as follows. Reading the OA 12 Steps is Janice M. Reading the OA 12 Traditions is Berta. And reading the text are Rick, Esther, and Judy B. The share ID for Sunday, January 19th, is 5792. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Janice M. to read the OA 12 steps.
Well, good morning to you, Rebecca. My name is Janice M., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. These are the 12 steps of OA. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you, Janice M. I will now ask Berta to read the OA 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Berta, recovered compulsive overeater in Illinois. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Berta. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in Chapter 1, Bill's Story, on page 12. For context, first we will revisit the two paragraphs prior to where we left off, beginning with "My friend suggested." Then we will pick up with and focus on the fourth paragraph, beginning with "It's only a matter." I will ask Rick to begin reading.
Good morning. My name is Rick. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Well, this is a great part in the book, and I'll start with what we revisited, where it says, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" And what I believe Bill was saying here, how he was interpreting Ebby's suggestion, was to start with whatever belief Bill had in God. Ebby was not saying, make up a God, create a God out of thin air, or design a God, or list qualities you want for God. We hear that in rooms, and that may work for some people, but that's not what's being said here. What's being said here is Evie's telling Bill to start with his own conception. And in the preceding paragraph, Bill was saying what he could go for and what he couldn't. I could go for creative, intelligent, universal mind or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens. So he was going through his own thoughts of seeing what he could accept and what he couldn't. If we go back to page 10, Bill says, I had always believed in a power greater than myself. We go a little further down. Bill said, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay it all. And Bill said he was not an atheist. What Evie was telling Bill to do was start with where you're at. And Bill says, nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. So Bill took his own ideas about God, what he felt comfortable with, and that's where he was going to begin. That was going to be how he got the ball rolling on his journey towards getting to know God. Bill wasn't inventing a God. Bill was using what was deep down inside him, as we read later on in the book. Inside every man, a woman, a child, there's a fundamental idea of God. That's where Bill was instructed to make his beginning. And then he was able to build what he saw in his friend. Growth could start from that point. That's where the willingness came in, and Bill was going to go forward with the directions that Evie passed on to him, and that's how he was going to develop his relationship with God. So I'll pass with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick. Would anyone else like to share the paragraph beginning with "It was only a matter"?
Lorna from Pittsburgh. Lorna from Pittsburgh.
And Paula.
Elaine.
Paula. And Elaine. And Janice.
Lorna from Pittsburgh.
Lauren, you were the first person.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I have Lauren, Paula, Elaine, and Janice. Was there someone else?
Barbara.
Okay, let's go with those in that order. So, Lauren, you're first.
Okay. Lauren S. Pittsburgh, recovered from compulsive overeating. To my knowledge, on this page 12, this is one of the first, if not the first, instances where Bill begins to use squiggly writing. So he's choosing this step, because this must be one of the areas where they have seen men fall and relapse. This must have been a step that he really wants to stick out in the book. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And also, in my opinion, it was that Bill was an agnostic. But if you are an atheist on the line and you're reading this still, going through the steps, or still a newcomer, we will read later, there's a chapter that discusses how there is hope for atheists, called the agnostics. But Bill is saying here, why don't you choose your own conception of God? It was what was helpful for me when I was going through these pages the first time was I was directed to do this direction. It says, if you're having trouble with the conception of God, try one of these words that are capitalized on this page and also on page 46 in We Agnostics, circle them while reading as you find them. And so one of the words I circled that we read was God, and then I circled power. And for me, using the concept higher power was a lot easier than God, because I had prejudice against the word God when I came in at the time. And also, this paragraph, it was only a matter of being willing, is where Bill's second step begins. It's where Bill's second step begins. So I was taught that his recovery process begins on page 9. Begins on page 9 when he sees Ebby, and he sees a living example. And not just a living example, but he knew Ebby when Ebby was hopeless, and when Ebby had either insanity, death, or to be locked up. Ebby was just like Bill. He was just like Bill. He was exactly like Bill. And in a way, this story that we're reading from Bill is probably really similar to what Bill was telling Dr. Bob when Dr. Bob was really AA number 2. So Bill was probably to Dr. Bob like Ebby was to Bill. So reading this book, I sort of put myself in the situation as if I'm like Dr. Bob, and I'm trying to piece together, am I like Bill? Is there hope for me? Is there somebody like me who is now recovered? And finally, oh man, for me, when I'm reading these paragraphs, if I turn these statements into questions that I can ask myself to really, really relate, it really helps me. It helps me. And so, for example, a question was for me, am I able to just be willing to believe? Just willing to believe in a power. That's it. You know, and once I did that, did growth start? Am I building a foundation? Did I have a friend? Did I know somebody or see somebody or hear somebody recovered that had a foundation? So that's helpful. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Lauren. Paula?
Thank you. And this would be Paula, recovered compulsive reader. You know, as I was listening, and I continue to listen, then my willingness. But it says that word conception, that's beginning. That's a beginning. That's all it is. And then it goes on. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. How often I thought so much more was required of me, and that is what stopped me. It did not start me. And then I realized, no, nothing more. That's it. Just being willing. And I saw that growth could start. Now, another time he uses the same word, all meaning the same thing, a beginning. Start from that point. Did you ever see in a race, they always have a starting point? And that's it. That was the starting point for me. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, that's it. Now, be very clear here. He uses another word to enhance the word complete. As little as I had, it was total and it was complete, and that's what I began with. I might build what I saw in my friend. He saw something that he wanted. And then he ends with, would I have it? Of course I would. If it was available for him, then it's available for me, but I must be willing. And that I was, and that I am. And thank you for allowing me to share. And with that, I do pass.
Thank you, Paula. Elaine?
This is Elaine, recovered compulsive overeater. Can you hear me?
Yes, Elaine.
Thank you so much. This is one of the most beautiful things that I have found in the Big Book and in the program. I think it's absolutely brilliant because so many people have preconceived notions. Even Bill talks about his grandfather's perceptions of church and convents, and those tend to shape our sort of understanding and idea of God and religion, I think probably the worst conception of God is the people that are in different religions and do things in the names of every religion in the world. If you look at those things that have been done in the name of God, how easy it would be to not want to have anything to do with that God or to turn to that God in a time of need, of hopelessness, of powerlessness. And yet, this is a great equalizer where people can come in and they're allowed to let go of the conceptions that they heard at school, on the news and newspapers, from family, from friends, from people they've bumped into that have stepped on their toes along the way, and to begin to open themselves up to that sunlight of the Spirit. We find later on as we progress in the program that there are other things that block us from the sunlight of the Spirit, and that we need to get those things out of the way in order to receive the maximum benefit of a relationship with God. This is only the beginning. It says that in the 12th step that we have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So just beginning to be open to the concept of a power of God, that isn't, in some cases, it is a lightning flash experience, but in other cases, it's slower. It's a process. And so I think it's absolutely wonderful for the Big Book to brilliantly put this in, because it helps people lay down those conceptions and begin a journey that can lead to a spiritual awakening sufficient to bring about recovery and a change of life that's a way of living that's second to none, that I never conceived of before. And, you know, there may be people listening on the line today that are bristling at the thought of God, that are bristling at things they've seen people do or say or whatever. And so this is just an invitation for you to begin to lay down those conceptions and experiences and begin to look a new way to let the sunlight of the Spirit begin to guide, you know, begin to guide you into freedom and into recovery. And though some people may have come to scoff, may they stay to pray. So thank you so much for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Elaine. Janice?
Thank you, Rebecca, and good morning. My name is Janice M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Let me see what's left. Okay, you know, when Abby came to Bill, and it seemed like a new idea. Oh, my, a new idea. That's nice for me. And I'm going to just say thank God for this statement, because this is what opens the door for millions of us. Because when you tell me, when I'm allowed, when I'm allowed to have my own conception or my own idea of anything, I love that. Let me believe what I want to believe. Don't tell me what to believe. Don't tell me how to believe. You know, leave it up to me. Oh, as a compulsive overeater, love that. I don't know about you. But when you tell me that, I say, okay, thank you. Let me believe and be willing to believe what I want to believe, my own idea of God. Then that sounds good to me. That's good enough. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice. Barbara?
Did you say Barbara?
I did.
Okay, thank you. This is Barbara. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And as I look at this paragraph and the preceding paragraphs, I'm focusing on that, you know, nothing more was required for me to make a beginning. I've spent a lot of time this week going back to beginnings, my beginnings in OA back in 1975, because of the passing of Roseanne, the founder, and because of yesterday's being the 54th anniversary of the starting of OA in California in 1860. So I've spent time walking my journey. And what I'm remembering as I look at this is one of those early meetings when I needed, God provided, someone at the meeting to begin to talk about food in terms of food being a false god. because I hadn't gone there. I had spent a lifetime going to looking at, you know, binges and depression and all the price to be paid and the powerlessness. And when I came to OA, it was very clear I was powerless. It was very clear my life was unmanageable. But it wasn't until that meeting that it was clear to me that I had made food of God in those terms. And I was a very religious person, but being a religious person did not allow me to be free from the God I had made of food. But coming to OA with the spiritual foundation and the practical plan of action, that provided the freedom. But this woman at the meeting was so graphic, and I'm remembering that she was talking about belief in God and making food a God and a false God. And she said, if food is your God, just take that bowl of food and put it on a chair and put the chair on a table and bow down. And that was an image to me that is so clear it stays to this day. And that was a great beginning for me. And then, of course, the movement to God, and as it says, the big book, it's the stories of how people came to God, the whole experiences, and finding a true God and a God within and all the other, you know, things that make up my own conception and anybody else's conception. But that was a breakthrough for which I'm very grateful. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Barbara. Did anyone else want to share on what was read so far this morning?
Eileen?
Eileen, go right ahead.
Thank you. This is Eileen, compulsive overeater from Bedford, Mass. I totally agree with what Barbara was just talking about, except I have to put it in the present tense rather than the past, that food is a false god, that whenever I have food thoughts, I have to always remind myself that God is there for me. Jesus is there. I have to believe in a higher power. And God is. He always is. And that when I think or I get absorbed in those food thoughts, and thank you, God, I no longer do. But when I do, I have to remember that it's a false god, that it's not based in reality. It's based in fantasy. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Yeah, it took me the willingness to surrender the food. The next willingness was to believe that there was a power greater than I mean. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. So true. You know, it took me a very long time to get this fellowship, to get this program, and that's where it all starts, with the willingness to surrender the food and the willingness to believe in a power greater than yourself. And like, you know, we were just hearing, choose whatever your own conception of God is. You know, what you were taught in your religion or not. You know, I always shunned the belief of God in my religion. I grew up Catholic, you know, and I didn't go to church for many, many years, but now I do, because I do believe that a God of my own conception is out there listening to me and worrying about me and wanting only the best for me. So, thanks. I'll pass.
Thanks, Eileen. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Go right ahead.
Hi. I it's interesting because I believed in something, but I was so numb to it, and I didn't know what that something was. And food didn't become anything godlike for me, except it didn't become God for me. But what it did become is a vehicle that was put in front of me that I thought came from someplace. Like, I kept saying to myself, there has to be a reason, like, why I'm, like, doing this. You know, like, why this is my, you know, whatever, but I don't know what that is. So was it, you know, a vehicle to higher power so that I'd, I don't know, because sometimes I, you know, have other things that I do that could be considered self-defeating and self-destructive. And now that I have gotten past that, I just, that's what I say to myself, okay, you know, God, this is here for a reason, so I'm going to welcome this and I'm going to do something with it. That's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Why don't we move on to the next paragraph? Esther? Are you available to read, Esther?
Good morning. My name is Esther. I'm a compulsive overeater in Canada. Thus, I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want Him enough. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. So this new world that is coming into view for Bill was a world that would now include God, his higher power. And what does he write has had been keeping him from coming to believe? Pride and prejudice. So when he came to finally reached his rock bottom, that did a very good job of removing for him, you know, his curtain of pride. And now these discussions that he's having with Ebby, and then Ebby's ultimate suggestion that Bill choose his own conception of a God, that would be for him the prejudice now melting away. So now he's able to see the world in a new way. And Bill is now poised to begin a relationship with his higher power. He hasn't actually done anything yet other than come to the conclusion that he needs a higher power. And I remember when I was at this point of my recovery in step two, and I'm grateful that I was taught this step with the simplicity that it really is, because at this point, I was only willing to believe. At this point, I didn't know yet what would be required of me, what God would have me be or do, how I'm supposed to pray, how I'm supposed to meditate, how I'm supposed to worship, or anything like that. This is just coming to believe. However we need to come to that conclusion is going to be different for everybody, but coming to the conclusion that we need to believe, we need to do that, and then we need to move on and make some decisions based on those conclusions. But really, it was stressed to me at this point just to keep it simple. Come to the place where I, you know, had a concept of a higher power and believe that that higher power could help me with my problem with food, and then just move on from there. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Esther. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Yael?
Yael, go right ahead.
Yael?
Yes, Yael.
Thanks.
Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Yael. Thank you. Yael, a compulsive overeater from Israel. I just wanted to share something very nice, interesting and nice that I heard about pride and about God's will. And ultimately, what does God want? God wants that we unify and we become one with each other and with Him. And that's ultimately the goal. And how do we do that? By removing our pride. And how do we remove our pride? So one way to remove our pride is by numbing our feelings. And if we numb our feelings, then guess what? When you're totally not feeling anything, so your pride is aside because you're not feeling anything. That's one way to do it. Or but you're not achieving the goal of creating a relationship with your higher power. And the other way to be able to remove your pride is to work the steps and to become one with Him. So I just found that really interesting, of getting to the same place, removing your pride, but from totally opposite directions. And which one are you going to choose? Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Ayel. Who else?
Hi, I'm Sheila. May I share?
Sheila. And then Kim. Sheila, go right ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. I just wanted to identify in and say at this point what became real for me was that I was choosing food over a relationship to the power greater than myself. Food had become, at that point, a comforter, a best friend, a confidant. And the work was just relying and having just the willingness to believe that God can and will replace that need for that. And that's been a wonderful journey. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Sheila. Kim?
Good morning, Rebecca. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. Thus, I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want Him enough. You know, the way Bill's story is laid out is very similar to the way that the Big Book is laid out. You know, 1 through 8 is that descent into the disease where he becomes convinced that he is an alcoholic and that he is powerless. So that's step 1. In the Big Book, we have a lot of information on that. We have doctor's opinion explaining the diagnosis. We have Bill's story, which is showing us a living, breathing example of what that looks like. There is a solution. The first half of that chapter is telling us the difference between the moderate eater, the heavy eater, the true compulsive overeater, so that we can be convinced, are we that true compulsive overeater? We're given a glimpse into that solution. And then in more about alcoholism, we're going to be talked about the insanity of just treating the physical part of our illness. What is it like to just be sober only? Which Bill experienced over and over again in this story. He could get sober. He could not stay sober. And then we're introduced into We Agnostics, which is not going to teach us about God. What it's going to teach us is our need for God. So 1 through 8 is coming to that conclusion we're powerless. We're now in pages 8 through 12, and we're being, getting to that conclusion we need a power. So that's what he's being convinced of. He's being convinced that he needs that power. And how is he going to get that power? He needs to want that power enough. You know, that's the conclusion he's coming to, that he needs that power. He wants that power. For me, I always explain the transition as I believed in a God, and I believe God believed in helping world hunger. But he didn't have time for Kim's hunger. It wasn't a personal God. He's recognizing now, if he is truly powerless, he's going to need a power to help him with this problem. You know, step 1 is coming to the conclusion that my ideas don't work. And in step 2, we're coming to the conclusion that this power seems to work for others. I don't know if it's going to work for me, but I trust that maybe these other people on the line, it works for them. Bill began to trust that it worked for his friend, and he understood his friend was as powerless as him. So what's going on? He's feeling that a need for that power. He wants that power. Okay, so he feels the need. It's changing to wanting it now. And now on page 13, when we go ahead, he's going to take action on getting that power. So we're going to see, even though that steps 1 and 2 are simply conclusions, the bulk of the book is going to try to get us to come to those conclusions, because until we come to the conclusions, we're not going to be willing to take the action. Our Big Book is laid out the same way. There's going to be a lot of information and a lot of we're going to have to come to the conclusion we're powerless. We're going to have to come to the conclusion we need that power. And once we come to that conclusion, the action steps are going to go quickly. But if we don't fully come to the conclusion we're powerless, if we don't fully come to the conclusion that we need this power, we're not going to make the decision to seek that power, and we're not going to take the action steps with the tenacity we need in order to do this. So this is so key, pages 8 through 12, he is now becoming convinced that he needs this power and that this power will come to him if he wants him enough and if he takes the steps, if he takes the action steps that's going to get him access to that power. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim. Anyone else?
Janice, just briefly, Rebecca. Janice M.
Janice.
Yes, thank you again, Janice M., recovered compulsive overeater. Let's remember now here the stage that Bill's at. Bill is still drinking, and he cannot stop by himself. He knows he can't stop from his own willpower. He knows he can't stop from the knowledge that he got from Dr. Silkworth. He knows that his, you know, no matter what he does, no matter what he relies upon, money or whatever, he cannot stop. He's still drinking, you see. So it's very important, because until I come to that point of pain, I can't stop. I can't, there's nothing else I can do. When all my reservations are gone, there's no other method left, then pain will do it. Because if I'm not convinced, because remember, no doctor convinced me, no husband convinced me, nobody convinced me, no meeting, no recovered person. You know, I wasn't convinced until I had that pain that I was, I felt hopeless. It seemed hopeless. And then, so he's still drinking. Now watch what happens. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice. Did anyone else want to share on this paragraph? Well, this is Rebecca, and I so appreciate everyone's sharing and feel that it's been so thorough. I just wanted to mention about Scales of Pride and Prejudice Fell from My Eyes. And I've shared this before on the line, that I learned that scales of pride fell from my eyes, or the scales falling from my eyes is a reference, is a biblical reference. And Pride and Prejudice, I think, is a reference to the book that was popular at the time by Jane Austen. And he does a great way of helping people identify in by bringing up references to things that people can relate to when they're reading this book. And at the time, those were two things that were prominent. I also want to share that with regard to Bill's Pride and Prejudice, that is what he spoke about earlier in this chapter. The first part of this chapter is about how his pride got in the way from him connecting with God in Winchester Cathedral, and he saw himself as a leader of great enterprise, and he had a lot of pride that stood in his way of seeing that he was powerless over the illness of alcoholism. And I've had a lot of pride myself that kept me from seeing that I had a problem with food. And he also had a lot of prejudice against religious people and those he believed, who believed in God, he believed were weak. And I could say the same thing about myself, so I can identify with Bill. And thank God someone like Ebby came to me and showed me that I could choose my own conception of God and led me to be willing to believe in that and to be to admit complete willingness, which was the beginning of my recovery. And a new world did come into view, and I did see growth that could start from that point in myself. And with that, I'll pass. Does anyone else want to share on this paragraph?
Hi, this is Jenica. I'd like to share.
Go ahead, Jenica.
Hi, I'm Jenica. I'm a compulsive eater in Pennsylvania. And what struck me in this paragraph was that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. And I, the way I initially hear that is, oh, if we want something bad enough, then God will kind of perk up and then be concerned. But after listening to people's shares and thinking about that for a little bit, what comes to me is that the way it would work better for me to hear that is that God is always concerned with us humans and every little detail. But when I need to want him enough to be able to be willing to do anything about it, to tap into that help and power that is always there. So that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Jenica. Would anyone else like to share on this paragraph?
Hi, it's Leanne.
Leanne.
Hi, I'm Leanne. Recovered for today. This is reminding me of the prejudice that I was raised with. I come from a small town in Pennsylvania, and everybody had the same way of doing God. Everybody had the same religion. We all had the same mindset. And this is reminding me of how when I was read this book and I was told to write down, you know, what my God would, you know, what kind of God would work for me. Slow by slow, the fear of having to think a different way was being removed because my desperation was so great. My pain was so great. I did everything in my religion up there to find relief. I did all the religious practices like triple of what other people did. And I couldn't find him. I was just so stuck and blocked. And it was a real, real step of faith for me to break out of that and do something different. And I remember in my first 2 years of doing it different, my parents would send me newspaper clippings of cults. And, you know, they were so afraid that I had joined a cult and that I was really going off the deep end. But I needed such a strong dose of God to make any kind of progress out of the pit that I was in. And they couldn't understand why I would leave my religion. I've come full circle since. You know, I had to leave and break away from all that my family instilled in me and taught in me. They weren't hungry. I mean, that worked for them, but I needed a deeper way of reaching God because my problem was so devastating and life-threatening, and I was so hungry for God that I had to leave and try a different way and really remove all that prejudice that I was raised with. It was a real step of faith to do it, and that religion was on my resentment list, and today I have come full circle, and now that I have the God of my understanding as a real part of my life, I can see the benefits, and I can see that I've been brought up to the place where people who can embrace religion are, but I had to do a lot more work to get there, you know, a lot more work just to get on par with people who are not addicts in order to accept and embrace and you know, implement religious practices in my life. So that's what that reminded me of today with the scales being removed. So that's all. Thank you.
Yeah. This is Rochelle. Can I share?
Judy F.
Yeah. Rochelle and then Judy F.
Okay,
ahead,
so
Rochelle.
Kind of quickly, this is, thank you. This is Rochelle currently in Israel. Responding to the comment about
can you check whether
the scales of Pride and Prejudice fell from my eyes. The book Pride and Prejudice.
Rochelle, we lost you.
It's
going to
be the
last
someday.
Press star 1 to unmute.
Hi, can you hear me now?
I can hear you, Rochelle. Before you continue, if you're not, Rochelle, could you please mute your phone?
What time is my appointment on Wednesday?
Someone speaking about an appointment. Could you mute your phone, please?
I would like my tea because...
Okay, so thank you, Rebecca. This is Rochelle currently in Israel. I want to respond to the part about the scales of Pride and Prejudice fell from my eyes. The movie Pride and Prejudice, it was made into a movie in about 1940, so I'm not exactly sure when this part of the book was written or that he's referring to. But if he's referring to about that time, then the Pride refers to... the misconception that the heroine had about
this fellow, Mr. Darcy, and the prejudice was also the prejudice that she had against him before because of her misconception of why he seemed kind of aloof and remote. But once she had the information that he was an apparent prejudice, an apparent pride, and therefore her apparent prejudice, those things fell away because she then had a correct perception of the person not being at all arrogant, and the prejudice was lost. So I think that perhaps that helps with understanding that reference, because it was simply a change of perception, which we would say perhaps that psychological change, that move that we have when we have resentments against other people, that when they fall away and we can see people from a different perspective, perhaps for saying the set-aside prayer, for example, then we see things a lot differently. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochelle. Judy S.? Judy S.? Press star 1 to unmute.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. This is Judy F., recovered compulsive reader from Massachusetts. What a great meeting. Thank you for your shares, and thank you, Rebecca, for your service. What I wanted to just point out, the sentence, at long last I saw, I felt, I believed. And for me, it was a process, coming to believe. And I think that's why that step two is we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, not we believed in a power greater than ourselves. Because for me, it was a process. And when I came in, I did have a lot of prejudice and fear and of a negative higher power. And I was given the instructions to write a want ad on what I would want in a higher power, what I needed in a higher power. And I didn't believe in it. I mean, I thought it was a stupid exercise, but I was desperate. I had reached such a hopeless state of mind and body that I knew for sure that my ways weren't working. The compulsive eating, the restriction, the bulimia, all the ways I was trying to control the food and my life. And so I was willing to write it down. And then that grew over these last 22 and a half years. That has grown into such a deep connection. And I don't have to even fully understand it. But that did come that I saw because when I practiced that believing, and then I could look back and see then how God was helping me and where he was in my life, that then gave me that confidence that there was a higher power that loved me, cared for me, and was guiding me. So it was a process for me, and I just followed the directions. I shut my mouth and just followed the directions because my way didn't work, and with that I passed.
Thank you, Judy F. Is there anyone else who would like to share on this paragraph?
Hi, this is Lisa.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, just reading the big book and seeing how full of pride I've been. I mean, I've done the process once and then going through and reading with all of you guys. I mean, I think pride and my pride and ego were the only things I had. And I thought that someday I was going to be rich and famous and that would solve all my problems while not taking my personal inventory and doing a daily 10, 11, and 12 and not seeing who I really am. I mean, my life was shot through with pride and ego. And when I started listening to the Vision for You and hearing all these people doing this work and being so transparent with their character defects, and that I wanted to be like you guys, and I wanted to step up to the plate and do the daily 10th step. And I've made, I thought I'd made all my amends, but I'm going through again, and there's a lot more amends that God is bringing to my mind. And that is a life second to none, really, to be able to throw away the scales of pride and prejudice and just the scales of who Lisa was all these years. you know, I'm 54 years old, and I feel like I am totally being reborn. You know, I feel like I want to sing it from the mountaintops, you know. I think they would think I was weird if I got up on the mountaintops in here in Colorado and sang, you know, Big Book Step Study saved my life. But that's what I feel like singing. So I'm really, really grateful to be here, and I'm going to keep coming back. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you to everyone who has shared. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Judy B. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning, Rebecca. Thank you for your service. This is Judy, recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us on the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.